BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Good afternoon. More and more of us are living alone. Almost 8 million of us in the UK living singly, according to the latest figures. And that's an increase of almost 20% in the last two decades. Older women left as widows, as men tend to die earlier. Increasing numbers of divorcees living by themselves in their 40s, 50s and 60s. And more of us not getting married or cohabiting at all. But various surveys suggest it can cost between £1,000 to £2,000 a year more to live by yourself than as a couple. So this week is all about the costs of living alone.
If you want to rent somewhere, something like a single bedroom property carries a premium. So maybe a single bed flat might run you £700 a month and a two bed would be
£850. It's so different if you live with someone else. You can share the food, you can share the cost of the water, light and these things. And if you are alone, it's so expensive.
You can't share bills with anybody, you have to pay everything solely on yourself, by yourself.
And as ever, we want to hear your stories, so please call Moneybox Live now on 03700 100 444. Geographic charges from landlines and mobiles apply, or email moneybox@bbc.co.uk. With me today is Professor Donald Hirsch from the Centre for Research in Social Policy at the University of Loughborough. Welcome, Donald.
Good afternoon.
There's some big changes in society, how we live. Is it fair to say that government policy has failed to keep up with the rise of singledom?
Well, it certainly doesn't seem to have any systematic way of addressing it. I mean, we think government policy thinks about how you can help, for example, families with children cope if they're having difficulties. We even think about giving heating allowances for pensioners because we think that they have a tough time in that respect. And there really isn't any systematic way that we think about whether, well, costs might be pretty high for single people and they might need some extra help.
We've also got a tax system that has a marriage allowance, inheritance tax that favours partners, and a pension system, one could well argue, that favours people with spouses or with partners.
Yes, and you can't, of course, give money to everybody. You have to be selective, but I think it's because of this increase in the number of single people and because of those extra costs we've been hearing about, I think it's definitely something that needs to be addressed.
Now, I've had an email on this from Elizabeth who writes, "What really irks," and I can't remember where we are on this, "are pious politicians demanding tax advantages for married couples. Why not for singles?" Elizabeth asks. And on the subject of fairness and or unfairness in the pension system, Stephen joins us on the line. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
What point would you like to make?
I'm a single person and I've been contributing to a pension fund at the same level as everyone else. But at the end of my life, the pension fund will just stop payments to me. A married person or someone in a partnership, the pension will continue to give payments to that person, or that person's remaining widow or widower.
So what do you think should be done?
I think there ought to be a mechanism whereby, through some formula, a one-off payment is made to the single person's estate, and that seems a much fairer way of moving forward to me.
Thank you, Stephen. In fact, Phoebe has written in on the same subject. She writes, "I'm a part-time teacher in the teacher's pension scheme, happily single, no plans to change that status, but my married colleagues can pass on their pensions to their spouses when they die. Presumably, my pension contributions are therefore more than they would be if the whole profession only received the pension as a single person." And this is something that Alan has got in touch with us as well, writing, "A friend of mine sadly died last year. She was single, age 55, with no dependents or partner, and all her relatives received from the pension scheme was three times her salary as a death-in-service payment. Her mother was told the premiums she had, her deceased daughter had paid into the pension scheme would be absorbed into the rest." Well, also with me is consumer journalist Cara Gamble. Welcome, Cara.
Hi there.
There is a caveat to this general trend of increasing single-person households in that the number of young adults living alone has actually gone down.
Yes, well, that makes complete sense, because with the cost of rent constantly creeping up, young people are really struggling to foot the bill for their own accommodation. And if you add to the fact that it's almost impossible to rent and save for a house deposit, many young people feel they have no choice but to stay at home with their parents.
Now, if you are in this bracket, we want to hear from you how you'd love to live alone but can't afford to. So remember the phone number 03700 100444, or email moneybox@bbc.co.uk. We also want to hear from you singletons as to your top money-saving tips, and we'll try to include as many as we can at the end of the programme. Well, let's hear now from one Moneybox listener who lives alone and has been adding up the costs.
My name is Monica Woodley. I'm 41 and I work as a freelance writer, editor and consultant. And I currently live in a one-bedroom flat, which I rent. I was married, so lived with my ex-husband. But after I got divorced, I decided that I really wanted to live on my own, so found my own flat.
So let's just talk a little bit about household bills. How do you think you're paying more because you're single?
All of the household expenses, so your rent or your mortgage, your utilities, you know, things like this are for the property. It's not really based on necessarily how many people are there. If I heat my flat, it's heated for me or heated for two people. So obviously I am paying more than if I was sharing the space.
What about the cost of water?
Right now, I don't have a meter. It isn't based on usage, and my bills are based on the value of the property, which is going to be the same whether it's a couple living in the flat or just me.
I mean, could you get a water meter installed?
Apparently, these aren't always easy to install in old properties, and also that is then dependent on your landlord approving that. So if you're renting a property, the decision isn't always yours of whether to get a meter or not.
You do get a discount on council tax.
Well, with council tax, you do get a single person's discount of 25%. I mean, obviously it helps, but I would argue that I'm still paying more than other people are. You know, the couple next door, I'm paying 75% of what they're paying rather than half. And I don't think that necessarily reflects my usage of council services.
Well, as we heard in the introduction, the costs to rent or even buy a one-bed or two-bed flat aren't that different. And that's because three rooms, lounge, kitchen and bathroom, are necessary in both. And so the costs of single occupancy housing, a lot higher. Donald.
Yeah, well, I think that what's really important to understand is the different effect this is having on different generations. As Cara said, for younger people, this is simply... It simply means that actually the majority of single people in their 20s now are living with their parents. This is a huge change from a generation ago. And so actually, in terms of living standards, they're perhaps not footing those bills of being single and paying for all of those things because they're getting them free from their parents. But a lot of the real impact on people's lives will come from the group for whom the increase has been by far the greatest in the number of singles, and that's the people in their 40s, 50s, early 60s. That is caused more by relationship breakup or people who've never had a partner. And they're the people who actually are living on their own, as we've just heard, and their living standards could go up by a third, I reckon, if they...
Coupled up.
Yes, so I was trying to put it in a polite
coupled
way.
Coupled up.
Yes.
And they're sort of older widows. They tend to have bought their house, or housing's not such an issue. There, it's energy costs.
I think energy costs is by far the biggest issue for them, because sometimes they might not live in very energy efficient homes.
And they're living on one pension, not two.
So they will find it harder to foot those bills.
Okay, moving on to bills. So electricity, gas, broadband, telephone line. Most people recognise these as being the same whether you live alone or with others. But things like repair and maintenance of your home, plumbing, electrical work, a new boiler, home furnishings, the cost of a sofa or a TV, washing machine or dishwasher. Carer, if you included these other things, then actually you think that the cost of living alone could be even larger than the surveys think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it goes without saying that those household bills aren't luxuries. They're things that you have you have to have. You need heat, you need energy, you need hot water. I mean, those aren't extras. But if you're the person that is paying for all of that out of your income, it's certainly a disproportionate amount for one person to handle.
And we had an email from Moneybox listener Brian, who wrote in to say, in the late 70s, I bought my first small bungalow in Leicestershire. My water bill was the same as a family living next door and a couple on my left. I requested a meter. It wasn't granted. I refused to pay the bill. The water company took me to court. My case was based purely on logic of why a single person should pay the same as a family. The judge was understanding, but the law of the time was that individual consumption rates weren't measured. I was fined £30, but satisfied because I had made my point in court against the full force of the Water Board legal team. I eventually was fitted with a water meter. Job done. Well done, Brian. The Moneybox team admire both your tenacity and your sense of fair play. So, Cara, water meters. Mm-hmm. Are there properties where meters, water meters can't be installed?
There are, but they are few and far between, really. I mean, a good rule of thumb is the more bedrooms you have than people, the more likely you are to save with a water meter. So whether or not you think you may be able to get one, it always is worth asking.
And is it the landlord or the tenant that decides if the meter's installed?
That really depends on your tenancy agreement. Usually, if you have a tenancy agreement of less than 6 months, you'll need the landlord's permission, but it can be a little bit, you know, there is a bit of a gray area for a longer length tendency. However, you know, most properties can be fit unless there is, you know, more than one supply of water. If you're on a shared water supply or the pipes are inaccessible or there's just nowhere suitable to fit it.
But it's definitely worthwhile trying, finding out. Moneybox listener got in touch to say the 25% discount on council tax is not enough, as single households use a lot less of local services than a family or even a couple. And she argues it should be a 50% discount. Donald, do you agree?
I think there's a very strong case for that. I mean, a lot of the things that we're talking about here are things which, this is just the way of the world. You know, if you've got one sofa or one television or one set of heating bills, that's just a benefit from being a couple rather than a single. But actually, you are paying twice as much per person for the services you use, and I think having 50% would be fairer. You know, there are not many ways in which the government can tackle this particular issue, but that would be one of them.
Now, Monica was also unhappy about her food bill, so I looked up some prices actually on supermarket websites, and it does seem there is a significant premium for ordering in smaller pack sizes. So I looked at Tesco. 6-pint carton of semi-skim milk costs 44p a litre. 2-pint carton costs 71p a litre, so it's almost double. And then one of the things my widowed 80-year-old mum complains about, she never eats a whole loaf of bread before it goes stale. And I looked up Sainsbury's Hovis soft white medium sliced loaf. A small one is 80p, but the double the size is £1.10. So what suggestions do you have for cutting food bills, Cara?
I think the biggest thing that you can do is to make the most of your freezer. So, for instance,
love your freezer.
Yes. So if you opt for frozen produce, for instance, vegetables or fruit, you're going to be able to make a savings because you won't have the food waste. I mean, how often do you buy vegetables that just end up rotting in the fridge because you can't eat them fast enough? But if you buy bagged frozen veg, then which is flash frozen at the height of its ripeness and is actually more nutritionally better for you, it's, you know, it's a no-brainer and it's about a third cheaper.
And I guess you can have a bit more variety.
Yeah,
well, don't have to eat your broccoli for 3 days in a row.
Exactly. You just take a handful out when you need it. And it, you know, it really is a win-win situation.
Well, Annabelle has emailed in. She says, I'm living alone and I'm saving money, mainly from not having to buy so much food and drink for my ex-husband. I'm in control of my own finances at last. Well, I think Annabelle's attitude is mirrored in Helen Croydon. She's 41 years old, an author and PR consultant, and she lives by herself and has a different take on the costs of doing so.
I go on a lot of sporty holidays because I'm really into triathlon and cycling. In those sorts of holidays, you know, where there's like lots of people sharing a room or sharing an apartment, as a single person, you can just slot in, or it's like it's okay to take the sofa bed. Whereas if you're in a couple, there's this element that you've got to be proper about it and you have a double room. And not only is that more expensive, it's also less fun because you don't like get involved with the group activities as much. And there's also, on a day-to-day basis, I think now that I have, now that I am in a relationship, and I'm glad I'm in a relationship, but I do spend more on food, for instance. So we don't live together, but if he comes round, there's a ceremonious element to the evening in that we'll cook nice food. Whereas if I'm on my own, you know, I'm quite happy with a bit of avocado on toast or whatever. And of course, I enjoy that. But I think the point is, there's an expectation that if you're in a relationship, if you're doing things as a couple, you do things properly. You don't just have a bit of muesli for dinner. You might just, at the spur of the moment, go out for dinner. And yes, of course, I enjoy that and I wouldn't change that. But if we're just doing this on a cost analysis basis, I think I spend more money through being in a relationship. And also there's more social events to go to. You know, when I was single, I had enough trouble keeping up with people's birthday parties, hen do's or whatever. And now that I'm in a relationship, I've got all his friends' do's to go to as well as my own. When you're single, you can just slot in, can't you? I don't know, say you're going to a wedding and there's loads of people that you know going to that wedding. As a single person, you can just say, oh, I haven't got a lift, can I slot in? And again, as a couple, it's just much harder to do that.
But with hotel rooms, effectively, it can be double the price because for a double room, two people are sharing, but with your case, it's one person.
Yes, but there's a caveat that you get a room to yourself and you get the bed to yourself and you probably get better quality sleep.
Donald, your reactions?
Well, we do focus groups looking at what people need for an essential minimum lifestyle. And it's quite interesting because in different countries it often works out differently. And in Ireland, for example, people said, oh, well, if you're a couple, you can eat in. Rather than go out because you don't have the sort of social isolation, you've got somebody for company, whereas single you need to go out. Whereas in Portugal, in Southern Europe, it was, oh, no, everybody needs to go out and socialise and it's an important part of our culture. And I think what we're hearing here is that lifestyles are very different according to individual preferences, and sometimes that works one way and sometimes another.
Well, we've had a number of Moneybox listeners get in touch about the costs of going on holiday alone. 62-year-old man said, my holiday to Sorrento has a single supplement of £1,000 alone. Zoe wrote in, I went on a cruise and had to pay £2,400 for a week against a double occupancy cost of £2,800. It felt like a punishment. We've had a load of Yvonne has called in. I accept the single room supplement for holidays, but sometimes it's excessive. She writes, we don't eat twice as much. Judy's written in January I went to Lanzarote for a week sunshine with some friends. The couples though in the group went for 2 weeks. Why? Because it cost each couple less to go for 2 weeks all inclusive than it did for me to stay for a week at half board. Liz called in. I'm not single, but my husband doesn't travel. I love travelling. It's infuriating to find travel agencies where there isn't a massive single supplement. It can be as much as £1,000. Shelley says, well, I ask myself every year, why do I keep paying exorbitant sums to package holiday companies? Maybe this year I'll be travelling independently. Come on, Kara, there's lots of people want your advice as to how to cut the costs of travelling solo.
Well, you know, there's no denying that holidaying alone can be an expensive business. And single travellers argue that the additional cost penalises them unfairly. But tour operators justify the charge by saying that the cost of providing the room, the heating, the lighting, cleaning and so on is the same no matter how many people occupy it. However, the good news is that there's a growing number of travel operators that pledge not to charge a single supplement depending on the time of year. So worth a look is the likes of Solo's Holidays, Just You or Chewy. And if you can be flexible with your dates, you might find a cheaper room if you're prepared to travel out of season when the rates are lower. And if you only have one diary to take into consideration, you'd be in a great place to do that.
Moving on to sort of other leisure activities, I looked up the costs of some of the things I pay for our family. So the music streaming service Spotify, £9.99 a month for one person, but £15 a month for a family of up to six. Video streaming service Netflix, I pay £9.99 a month, but that gives me access for four of us to watch at the same time. But if I wanted one person to watch, it would cost £5.99. Not much of a discount. And Amazon Prime, my membership costs £79 a year, but all the family can get free delivery and the family use video and music services. Audible also, speaking books. Is there a way to reduce these costs, these streaming services? Because if you add them all up, it's a considerable expense compared to being sharing the cost over a family or even as a couple.
Absolutely. A third of us have video streaming services online, according to the comparison site Broadband Genie, but just 25% of those actually share their login credentials with people outside their home, because most people don't realize you're allowed to do that. The sites from, you know, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Audible, the terms and conditions don't make it very clear whether you're allowed to share it or not, because the language is quite ambiguous. But legal experts say it's a grey area, especially considering the varying levels of service. Personally, this is something that I've done for years. I have several households on my Netflix account.
Who?
Well, one of them is my best friend who lives from Canada, and she's a grad student and has, you know, a limited income because she's studying. And so I've added her to my Netflix account so she can still, you know, be able to watch TV and not have to worry about it. And we joke that I've been treating her to Netflix all during her education.
Audible?
Yes, Audible is another one. My sister in Canada also uses my Audible account, but we do it because we like to listen to books at the same time and then kind of talk about it. And it's almost like a transatlantic book club, really. But we can, you know, listen to the books at the same time, and it's only one bill. So it seems like such a great way to save money.
And this is legal?
Yeah, I mean, I've contacted legal experts about this for stories in the past, and they all agree that, you know, the terms and conditions don't specifically state that you can't do this. So until that time, go for it. And, you know, I have friends that do one pays for Netflix, another pays for Now TV, and then they just do a swap.
Now, they've got gym membership can be cheaper in a couple. National Trust has family membership. You get family cinema tickets. Donald, what's your opinion of all these advantages to being coupled up or in a family?
Yeah, well, it's not all one way. I think that people, especially younger people, and especially people with limited accommodation, are doing more things outside the home compared to inside the home. And a lot of things like eating out or going to the cinema, you're actually paying twice as much for two. Whereas if you were at home, you'd have your television, but you only need one television, one TV license. So I think there is, and also with things like transport, if you're traveling by public transport, which is becoming quite a big cost for people, especially in somewhere like London, again, you have to pay twice. You aren't necessarily getting these savings. Whereas if you can afford a car, then of course you can get huge savings.
Well, let's move on to that transport and travel, because research from Which? Has found that single people can pay up to £40 a year more than their married counterparts for car insurance. And this has struck a chord with you, our audience. Elizabeth emailed in, "I tried some years ago to get my then partner on my car insurance, but I was told it would be cheaper if he actually lived with me. Presumably, they think people who live together are more stable individuals." I think she was being sceptical there. But the Association of British Insurers says there are good reasons why married people may pay less for their car insurance.
Insurers look at a wide range of factors when assessing the premium that they are going to charge. Now, some insurers will have claims data that shows that your relationship status could increase the risk of a claim being made on the policy. And where they have that data, then they will take that into account. But it will not be the only factor that they will look at. They'll look at a whole range of factors, such as the type of car, where you live, and your driving history. There are a whole plethora of discounts available in the motor insurance market, not so much if you're single, but conversely, there may be premium discounts available if you're adding additional drivers to the policy. It really does depend on the individual insurer's assessment of the risk.
Cara, the solution as ever is to shop around.
Yeah, absolutely. Just because insurers deem you to be higher risk for being single doesn't mean that you need to take the first quote that you're offered. So just like anything, make sure that you shop around, check out the comparison sites, and make sure you get the best deal that is available.
Breakdown cover can also be cheaper if you're in a couple and buy a joint policy. And of course, the costs of buying and maintaining a car are the same, irrespective if one or two of you drive it. But the shared economy could help here, Donald. Can you explain?
Well, obviously, if you've got a couple, you can share a lift to a party. But if you're a single, you want to take an Uber, find a mate who you can share with. I think that what we've been hearing here is it's about looking around for opportunities of sharing with people, which is, of course, harder if you're not a couple, but you can still save a lot of money.
Cara?
Yeah, I mean, one easy way to save money is to consider car sharing. There are around 38 million empty car seats on the UK roads every rush hour. So if you joined like a carpool scheme or just teamed up with a buddy from work, you could save serious cash. Research from Inchcape shows that the average you could save by sharing could be as much as £791.
Great. Now, we've had a number of you get in touch. Sue writes in, as a single person without a freezer, I'm being fed up with being told I can make use of 3-for-2 offers by storing the surplus in my freezer, suggesting I increase my fuel bills and use of fossil fuels in order to optimise access to cheaper food is conflicting. Maureen says, she's delighted to hear on your programme today, a lady expressed what I've been saying for years, why is the council tax discount 25%, not 50%? We've had a tweet into @Moneybox. I asked for a water meter but can't have one fitted because of shared pipes. But the water company reduced my bill, though, without me asking, so I now pay £10 less a month than the house next door, which is half the size. Results. So that goes back to the idea of always being open to negotiation. Just finally, some top tips. We've got Rosemary on the phone. Hello, Rosemary.
Hello.
You've got a top tip for our listeners. Please tell us what it is.
Do look into the possibility of having a water meter fitted. I live in a council-owned flat. They didn't mind me having one. It's in my bathroom, and I've halved my bills.
You've halved your bills. How much money have you saved?
I save £200 a year, and I've had it for about 4 years now.
Rosemary, you are an inspiration to all of us. Thank you for calling in. Cara, very quickly, your top tips.
I'd say always make sure you haggle on your broadband and TV deals. Figures from which show that 85% of hagglers are successful in getting a good deal.
Donald, quick top tip.
Well, for the government, really, think about how you can actually make rent a bit cheaper for single people, provide more affordable housing for on a small scale, because if society is changing this way, that's going to be really important.
So that's a message to the government to change policy as a result of the rise of singledom.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we have time for, sadly. My thanks to Donald Hirsch from the Centre for Research in Social Policy at the Loughborough University and consumer journalist Cara Gamble. And thanks to you all for your calls and emails. You can find out more from our website, bbc.co.uk/moneybox, where, of course, you can listen to the programme again. Moneybox is back at noon on Saturday. Goodbye. And we had an email towards the end of the programme that I must read out. It says, I don't live alone. I live with two people who literally suck the money from me. They're called kids. Richard from Sheffield, I couldn't agree more. Well, I hope you enjoyed that download of Moneybox Live. The programme is broadcast every week at 3 o'clock on Wednesday afternoons. There's more information and details of how to contact us on our BBC Moneybox website. We tweet @Moneybox. And if you want us to look into something, then please email us, moneybox@bbc.co.uk.